We're doing Michta Midiyahu in the Hebrew, it's on page 85. This is his class on the first chapter of Tehillim, which is a six verse chapter. It's very short, very, very short, very concise. It's unique because he doesn't actually do Tehillim, but this is a particular shiur on Tehillim. What we saw in the first four verses, just to quickly recap, verse 1 dealt with keeping away from bad company, and the reason is because bad company influences us. They teach us, consciously and unconsciously, that we are affected by their attitude. And he spoke about three types of people we want to avoid. We want to avoid the wicked people who don't keep Torah and mitzvahs. We want to avoid the sinners who do keep Torah and mitzvahs, but they are slack. And because they slack, so it creeps into the service of Hashem. There's a certain laziness, a certain type of disregard for mitzvahs. And the third type we want to avoid are the wastrels, people who calls them the jokers. But they're people who waste time. They look to waste time. They're basically able to sit for hours and hours and just chat about nothing. And therefore they are a very negative influence. Okay, that was verse 1. Verse 2 was, in contrast, instead of that influence, I want another influence. I want the influence of the Torah. But I toil in the Torah, which doesn't just mean learning Torah, it means associating with Torah people who influence us positively. And it's just like we want to avoid those who influence us negatively. So we want to spend more time with those who influence us positively, through their company, or through their talk, or through their classes, whatever it is. So that we said is this Ashrei Ha'ish, this fortunate person, this happy person, and toils in the words of the Torah of Hashem, and he thinks over his own Torah. And that is because, as we said, not all the Torah you learn is applicable, but what does apply to you, you have to incorporate in your life. So you have to think through Torah concepts you've learned, Torah concepts that you know, and you have to apply them to your own lives. So therefore, the person's always thinking how to live his life in the ideal way. That's what he's looking for. So he's toiling in his own Torah. He's toiling in his own Torah, in others, his own application of the Torah. That was verse 2. Verse 3, we started giving the benefits of the person who's devoted himself to Torah living. So we said he's like the tree that's planted by the streams of water. There's a split where the streams run down to the ocean, so they join up together. So where the streams join, so you've got streams on either side, that's where the tree is planted. So that represents the Torah person who is nourished both from the challenge of living in this world, because he uses this world to serve Hashem, as even though the physical activities of this world he devotes to the service of Hashem, he eats for the sake of Hashem, right? He eats to have energy to serve Hashem, etc. And also from the other stream is Torah living. So Torah living together with devotion, dedication, that all parts of his life should be the service of Hashem, that nourishes him. And we explained that the world does nourish us. The world gives us the resources we need to serve Hashem. Sometimes we use those resources for the wrong thing, and therefore they don't work as well. But when you're using the world that you're given specifically to serve Hashem, so then it matches, almost a perfect match. So then it's ideal. Then you're getting exactly what you need. Like if you have an expert nutritionalist, an expert doctor who's giving you a special diet, and he's giving you exactly what you need. So the world also gives us exactly what we need to serve Hashem. And sometimes when it withholds something from us, right? Let's say we want to do a certain mitzvah, but we can't do it for whatever reason. We're being withheld, or we don't have the strength to do it. So there's also a reason for that. Everything is exactly measured for us. So that's the ultimate care. We get the ultimate care from HaKadosh Baruch Hu when we're living the lifestyle he wants us to live. And then part two of that verse is that person will produce fruit in his time. Number one, fruit. His leaves will never wither, and whatever he does, he will succeed. So what are these three things? Fruit in its time refers to our good deeds. Those are our fruit, our products, what we produce. So we produce beautiful acts, we produce beautiful thoughts, beautiful words, we do beautiful things, beautiful charity, etc. So we have beautiful fruit, and the fruit comes in the right time, in the right place, in the right time. It's appropriate. The right fruit is appropriate. the leaves basically are for the benefit of the tree and not for the benefit of other people, and that's the in terms of our physical needs, in terms of our material needs. So therefore, what we do is we do for the sake of Hashem, and therefore it protects us, just like the leaves protect the trees. So we are taken care of. We are able to take care of ourselves. We don't become dependent on other people. We're able to. Our leaves also flourish. They never wither. But the fruit is seasonal. You produce fruit in a season, but leaves is all year round. So therefore, the leaves, because the tree needs care all year round, right? Because it has to, right? You do certain mitzvahs you only do once a year, right? Rosh Hashanah we only keep once a year. But eating, we eat every single day. We need to eat every day. So therefore, that's like the leaves. Hashem takes care of our needs on a daily basis. That's the leaves. It's the fruit, the leaves. And then there's the lost phrase is very strange. It doesn't really make sense how it fits in. And it says, and whatever he does succeeds. B'chol asher yaseh yatzliach. He's like this tree, beautiful fruit, beautiful leaves. And whatever he does, he succeeds. What is that talking about? And here Rav Dessler told us an amazing idea, a beautiful idea. And this is so central, and people don't speak about it enough. And that is the idea that we able to suffer with joy. Hashem,
able to what?
Suffer with joy.
Suffer
in this world with joy. Hashem sends all of us different types of frustrations, different types of suffering, whether it's physical ailments or surroundings or financial pressures or whatever it is, emotional pressures, whatever it is. Everybody is challenged. We're all challenged all the time with difficulties. Right? Being in this world is about going through a series of obstacles. That is how it is. It's for everyone. We're here, this is the world of doing. We're here to accomplish, and for us to accomplish, we have to be challenged. It has to be difficult for us, otherwise what are we gaining? If all we're doing in this world is what's easy, then what are we gaining? So we're given an obstacle course, which is difficult, which is challenging, and which we're not always equipped to deal with, right? So therefore we face new challenges. I've never done this before, I've never done that before. Wow, what does Hashem want from me? Like, all of a sudden a person comes into our lives, and we don't know how to deal with this person. You know, I'm so good with people. With this person, he drives me crazy. So therefore, Hashem sends us these new challenges. Right? The tzaddik, the person who has a Torah, hashkofa, Torah lifestyle, so he takes on these challenges with joy. Which doesn't mean that he enjoys the hardships. I mean, who can enjoy hardships? If something is painful, it's painful. If something hurts, it hurts. But he's happy to take on Hashem's challenges because he realizes it's for his good, and therefore he has a very positive attitude to everything that's difficult. The worst hardships that come his way, he greets them with a smile, Shalom Aleichem, this is the hardship that's been sent to me for my benefit. This is the program that Hashem has devised for me in my progress. I'm climbing up the mountain of Hashem, I'm getting closer to Hashem all the time. This is a special obstacle I have to overcome, and therefore I'm happy to greet it. I'm happy to have it in my life. I'm not looking to avoid it. I'm happy to face the challenge that Hashem has sent me, and therefore there's a positive attitude, and that is considered success. That's real success, that a person suffers through all types of difficulties. Yeah.
I'm sorry, what pasuk is that?
We're still in verse number 3. B'kol asher yaseh yatzliach. That's what the verse is. In contrast, verse number 4 speaks about the wicked. The wicked, those people who do not go by the derech of Hashem, they don't go on the way of Hashem. So for them, every frustration, it breaks them down. They just can't take it. Anything that goes wrong, and sometimes it's the smallest thing, it just creates a breakdown. They can't cope. They're falling apart. They're going crazy, etc., etc. There's no coping mechanism. And they, because they are described to be like the leaves, they describe it as like a chaff of the wheat, which has no substance to it. It's just a shell, an empty shell. And therefore, it's very, very light, and the wind just pushes it this way and that way and this way and that way. So therefore, every type of trouble causes a breakdown. They just, because there's no spiritual content, so there's no weight. People have, or they have no weight to themselves at all. There's no weightiness at all. And therefore, they can't cope with difficulties. Unless everything goes perfectly smoothly, so then they fall apart. So that's the misery of those people who do not have a Torah approach. In other words, they also have to suffer, because we all suffer. We all suffer, period. But we know how to cope with suffering, and we greet it with joy. Smechim b'yisurim. So that's the highest level. The person rejoices in suffering. And they fall apart. And that leads them to misery, to distress, to despair. They give up on their own lives. They might even lead them to suicide. That's what he actually says. It might even lead them to suicide. And if not actual suicide, there's a type of temporary suicide where a person just, you know, spends a few days in bed because he feels so miserable. So he spends 3-4 days in bed. That's also like a suicide. He's just cut himself out of life. He's divorcing himself from this world. So he's gonna lie in bed. He's gonna put the covers over his head, and the only thing he puts under the bed is a slab of chocolate. So he spends a couple of days in bed with eating chocolate, and that's it. That's his escape. So that's also like a type of suicide. It's the inability to really enjoy life because there's a lack of reality, that he doesn't know that life is about difficulties. That's really what it's about, and that's what he misses out on. That's what he can't understand. Okay, verse 5. This is new now. So verse 5 says, Al kein lo yakumu rishoyim b'mishpat. Therefore, the wicked cannot stand when they are judged. V'choytim ba'adas tzaddikim. And the sinners cannot be in the company of the righteous. So it's two parts to that verse. Part 1. So the part 1 again is the wicked cannot stand up when they are judged. Says Rav Desla, since there's such a great difference, such a huge par between the lifestyle of the righteous person and the lifestyle of the wicked person, because the righteous person is filled with spirituality. Spirituality basically is the content of his life. It's all about spirituality. Because even when he's doing other things, even when he's playing his bills or whatever it is he's doing, physical things, it's all about being a frum Jew. It's all about being a Torah observant Jew. So therefore his life is filled with ruchnias, and the wicked person is totally empty. He only has the material world. He's got nothing else. He rejects everything else. He pushed Hashem out of his life and doesn't want to hear about Hashem. So therefore you have this huge power, and therefore, therefore, lo yakumu rishoyim b'mishpat. Therefore, the wicked cannot stand up to be judged. Kum, the word to stand here means the ability is to remain standing. He cannot stand in judgment. He cannot remain standing. You come before the judge, and he cannot remain standing. He collapses. His defense, he has no defense. So his defense collapses. It crumbles. So we're saying that the wicked cannot stand up when they judge, means they cannot remain standing. That's the understanding here. Which is to say, someone has to come before a judge. He has to stand up before a judge. He's worried that he'll be found guilty in court. They'll make him liable. The culture came there, Shasha Yeda, and all the more so if he already anticipates, he already knows that he hasn't got such a clean slate. He already knows, he's already got a feeling that he's going to come out with a bad sentence. Nikol Mokum, nevertheless, he shtadl asig oyachtiv. Even so, he'll make an effort to try and get a good lawyer. He'll at least try, even though he knows that he doesn't really have a good case, and he knows that they've caught him doing the wrong thing. Still, he'll make an effort to get a good lawyer. Sometimes a good lawyer can swing things around, even though he knows himself he's guilty. Maybe the lawyer can find some sort of redeeming quality, some sort of excuse for him, for his actions. He'll be able to speak well on his behalf to the judge. However, sometimes you have it that no lawyer is prepared to accept his case for this particular party. Right? This person is so guilty. So no, if the lawyers themselves give up on it, they say, no, sorry, we don't want the job. It's a losing proposition. And no lawyer is prepared to accept this person as his client. Because there's no way to justify his actions. So when the lawyer says, yeah, there's no case here, there's nothing for me to argue here, there's no way that I can lighten your sentence because you have no redeeming features. This is exactly what we're speaking about here. He cannot stand before the judge. Because that difference between the righteous person and the wicked person is so obvious, it's so huge, that gap. He has no justification at all on the day of judgment. ונבין איך יגיש הראש בעצמו בשעה שיגיע זמן לעמוד בדין. And we can feel, we can understand how this wicked person will feel when it comes his time to stand in judgment. Right? No one wants to help him. He says he can't get a lawyer. So imagine what a feeling he has. Because he can be yodu she'amod lifnei mi, especially if he knows who he's standing in front. Lifnei melech malchei hamlochim hakodesh baruch hu. He's standing in front of Hashem, which is every single person at the end of 120 years will be coming before Hashem, and he'll be challenged. Exactly, what did you do with the life? We gave you a life. We just supplied you with resources. We gave you strength. We gave you health. We gave you people to help you. What did you do with the life we gave you? So he knows he's coming in front of Hashem. There's no excuses. There's nothing to. There's no one who can fool. Shakol golu yubor lufonav. Everything is clear. It's all clear in front of Hashem. So therefore, what hope does the Rosha have? What possible hope would the wicked person have? And there's a very wonderful midrash on this verse, right? That the wicked are unable to stand before Hashem in judgment. So it's the midrash says like this: Amar Kodesh Baruch Hu L'Shoyim. Hashem says to the wicked, Ani Amati Ve'Yichein. It should be so. I said, let it be so. Where was that? That's Bebriyas Olam. That's in Bereishis. And Hashem created the world. So therefore, Hashem said, let it be like this. And it was so, right? Ve'yichein. Hashem said, let there be light. Ve'yichein. And so it was. As Hashem said, and so it was. Ve'yichein. It was so. Bebriyas Olam. Kach akol tzrichim lekayim ritzoin yisborach. And that's whatever Hashem commanded when he created the world. It was done. Hashem said, let there be light. So there was light. Let there be a sky. Let there be a water. Let there be earth. Whatever it was. Whatever Hashem commanded. So it was. The boss has spoken, right? He's the master of all. So whatever it was so. And you say, not so. But when it comes to you, you speak to the wicked person. Everything, when I created this world, whatever I asked for was immediately fulfilled. And you say, no. I say, yeah, let it be so. And you say, not so. You say not so to me. Right, that's what the Midrash says. Ani amati lechein. And when I said not so, when I gave the mitzvahs of the Torah, and I said, this you shouldn't do, and that you shouldn't do, this you shouldn't do, I gave the negative commands, b'chol mitzvahs lo yisaseh, atim oimimchein, you say, yes, I will do it. Right, I said, you know, don't break Shabbos. Yeah, I will break Shabbos. Right? So when I say to do, you say, no, I'm not doing it. And when I say don't do, you say, yes, I will do it. Right? Chayechem. So then Hashem, so to speak, takes an oath. Loichein, it will not be so. You have no place here. I can't tolerate you in my heavens. What everything I say, you say the opposite. Chayechem, loichein, it's not going to be so. You have no standing here. You are out. Loichein, right? There should not be such a thing. Okay, loyakumu rishoyim v'mishpat. And that's what it means here. The wicked have no standing in judgment. When the judgment, day of judgment comes, that's it, they're out. There's nothing, there's no room for you here. We don't want you here. We don't need you here. You're just negative. We just don't want you. You have no room in the world to come. Okay, that's in terms of the wicked, which you said, who are those who are purposefully go against the Torah. What about the choitim? The choitim are the sinners who sin inadvertently. Through laziness, through slackness, so they sin. No, fine, thank you. Even those who sin inadvertently and they say it was a mistake, I overlooked it. I wasn't paying attention, I didn't realize. And therefore, please judge me leniently. I didn't notice what I was supposed to do. So about that's the part two of the verse. Part two of the verse says, the choitim, the sinners, will not be in the company of the righteous. Now, they do have some justifications, but they can't travel with the tzaddikim. They're in a different category. We can't put you together with the tzaddikim. You'll be in a separate place. Hitztadkusam lo yitoil. All their justification, right? You see the word hitztadkut, they want to justify themselves to say that they are also tzaddikim, just that they missed a few points, right? So they say, let us be together with a tzaddikim, which is the best possible place, because, you know, we were unfortunate, right? We just, you know, we were a little bit, we missed a few points. So all their justifications cannot help. La Ruisitz Atzmuk Ilu Tzaddik, and he wants to show the choite, the person who basically is Torah observant, but he's been slack. He's let this pass and that pass and that pass. He wants to show himself to Hashem that he's basically also a tzaddik. So that won't work. Yanshim ha'emes hayu yirei Hashem. Because in truth, if he really was God-fearing, if he really did have yiras shamayim, if he really did fear Hashem, lo hayu shoichachim, he says, I forgot it was Shams. Oh, yeah, I forgot the sun had set, right? And I forgot this, and I forgot to... So he's saying, you forgot this. So the answer is, if you really were God-fearing, if you had really had yiras shamayim, you wouldn't forget. You don't forget important things. You forget things that are insignificant. The fact that you've forgotten, that shows that you don't give importance to your lifestyle. Okay, Adam Shechech is Mashu Negele Chayiv Mamish. A person doesn't forget something that has to do with his life. If it's something that has to do with a life-saving effort that you have to make, and you have to save someone's life, you don't forget. There's certain things you just don't forget. Right? So therefore, the fact that you forgot shows a disregard. And therefore, you cannot stand with the tzaddikim. Shelo yerashoyim v'meli tzaddik. Because they will not have any type of justification. Ki avoy ledin im tzaddikim yachad. When they come to judgment together with tzaddikim, when the choyter, the sinner, comes to judgment, so there are other people there. Right? People coming in all the time. So there'll be tzaddikim there in the court at the same time that he's in the court. So the Rosh will say, you know, I just made mistakes, I forgot. So then the courts will say to them, Halagama das tzaddikim hayu bo'olam hazeh. Surely that person who's a tzaddik, he was also in this world. He suffered the same, he faced the same challenges as you did. Right? And he came out okay. How come he didn't forget, and how come you forgot? Halagama das tzaddikim hayu bo'olam hazeh. Lama lo shachu heim, how come they didn't forget? Because they were truly God fearing, they truly respected the word of Hashem. V'atem lo, and you were disrespectful. Your forgetfulness is a sign of disrespect. Now, there's a famous Gemara that says, it's a Maseches Yuma, that says as follows: Oni v'oshir boim ladin. The poor man and the rich man come to court, come to be judged, which is when a person is judged for his actions in this world. So the Gemara gives two examples of a rich man and a poor man. The poor person, they say, they'll say to the poor man, why did you not engage in Torah? In other words, you had an obligation to study Torah and to learn Torah. Think about Torah. Why were you not engaged in Torah? We say the bracha every morning, last week, to be engaged in Torah. I mean, that should be our main occupation. That's our, you know, what do you do? People say, what do you do? I'm engaged in Torah. I'm occupied in Torah. Torah is my occupation. By the way, I also have a job. By the way, I also do this and that. But the main occupation is Torah. The main engagement. You know, our minds are. That's what our minds are working in. So they're going to say to the poor person, why were you not engaged in Torah? If he says back, I was a poor person and therefore I was very occupied with earning a livelihood. Which, by the way, most people are going to claim when it comes to Hashem, is going to say, why didn't you learn to? And many, many people are going to say, well, panosa, I had to have a job, I had to keep down a job, I had to feed a family, I had to support my family. So, oimrim lo. So, that seems to be a very fine excuse, right? That seems, looks like a good excuse. You know, I had to keep a job, I had to have a job. So, they're going to say back, yeah, the Gemara is actually telling us what they're going to say. They're going to say back to him, surely you were not poorer than Hillel. As needy as you were, as much as you were in need, you needed to, whatever it is, you needed to pay the bills, you needed to buy the food, etc. You were not as needy as Hillel was. They say about Hillel the elder, Hillel who became the leader of the Jewish people. Now, he wasn't born the leader of the Jewish people. In his later years, he became the leader of the Jewish people. But in his earlier years, he was a young man, just like any other young man. He was just like anyone else. So they say about Hillel, Shebechol yom v'yom haya oise melochto u'mistake v'tarpik. Every day he would do his job until he earned one tarpik, which was a very small coin. He would work exactly as much as he needed to earn a tarpik. Whatever that was, whether it was a simple labor, it was a small coin, it was one of the smallest coins. Once he had a tarpik, he quit. Right? That was his work for the day. Half of it he would have to give to the god of the shul. The shuls in the old days were out in the fields because it was rural type living, so people were scattered, right? The farms were all far apart, And the Beis Midrash was somewhere in the middle, but it was like a deserted area. So they needed a god. They needed to keep a god. And therefore, anyone who used the Beis Midrash would have to pay the god a sum of money to enter the Beis Midrash. So the fee to enter the Beis Midrash was half a tarpik. So he would earn a full tarpik. He could give half the tarpik to the god to go in. Where the other half of the tarpik, he subsisted, him and his family. That was for just keeping themselves going. And it's amazing because the small coin which he used to earn, was half of it was for his family. That's what you're going to live on. In other words, they were managed living very, very simply, extremely simply, with the ultimate, absolute simplicity. The other half, the entire other half, went to the God just to die into the base of Midrash. Because can we imagine such a thing? Imagine, I mean, nowadays if you had to pay someone to go into the base of Midrash, how much would they charge you? What would they charge you? 2-3 shekels, 5 shekels. So the other was, he was supporting his family on the other 5 shekels. Pam achas, the story goes on. Pam achas le motza listake. One day he couldn't make money. He couldn't find a job. No one wanted to hire him. The guard wouldn't let him in. He didn't have the fee. Sorry, you're not coming in. So he went up on the roof where there was a skylight. And he went and he hung his head down into the skylight. He should hear the class. You should hear the class while from sitting on the roof. So he should hear the words of the living God from Shmaya Naftolim. Those were the Gedolim of their generation. Shmaya Naftolim were the two great Torah sages. By the way, they were both converts. Imagine they were both converts. They rose to the highest position in the Jewish people in those days. There were such geniuses in Torah. They are the link from Sinai till today. One of the links is Shmaya Naftolim. So they were the leaders of the generation, and he went to hear their class. He stuck his head in the skylight, and that's how he was perched on the top of the roof with his head in the skylight. That day was a Friday. It was Friday afternoon. That was when the shir was. Slightly different than today. And it happened to be the month of Teves, which is midwinter. Vayerid alav shelig, and snow, it snowed on him the entire night. And it seems to me he must have been oblivious. He was so engrossed in the class. It must be that he was oblivious, or he thought that it's not so terrible. The snow is not so terrible. So the entire night it snowed over him and it covered him completely. When the dawn rose, they'd been going through the night with this class. When the dawn rose, Shmaya said to Avtalion, Avtalion, Achi, b'chol yom abayis meir v'ayom ofel. He said, Avtalion, my brother, every day the house becomes lighter this time, and today it's remaining dark. Shema yom u'una, maybe today is very cloudy. Yitzitzu enehim, so they peeked up, they raised their heads for the first time probably. They've been engrossed in their learning, but now they're going to raise their heads and have a look at the skylight, see what's doing up there. They raised their heads to look. Varut mus odom varuba. They said, look, there's a man in the skylight. We see there's a human form in the skylight. They went and they found 3 amot of snow. An amah is approximately 2 feet. Right? So there was 6 feet of snow. 6 feet of snow on him. Where were they? I'm not sure. It's actually interesting. The Gemara says, he's not quoting it here. The Gemara says, There was 6 feet of snow. There was 3 amas of snow from the heavens. So what does it mean it's from the heavens? All snow falls from the heavens. No, this was from the heavens. This was specially as an example of, as this was a special snow that was specially for him to be an example for the Jewish people, that we should, this is what devotion is about. This is what it means to be devoted. Not that he didn't support his family, not that they didn't have what to eat, but this is how he did it. This was his approach to giving the most to the Torah. And the rest he should subsist on the minimum, the bare minimum. Taku, they took him, they dug him out. So they bathed him, they set him next to the fire. And they said, Royu lechalel alav Shabbos, such a person is worthwhile, such a person is worthy to break Shabbos for him. Alkein kishiyovu oni ledin. And therefore, when a person comes to din to shemaim, v'yom shelo lomad tei bnei shayoni. He says, I didn't learn Torah. I was busy with panosa. I had a job. What must I do? A full job. V'yom lo lamad le mosa nafshal limudat tei kilo. They're going to say, but why didn't you act like Hillel? You knew what Torah was about. You know how valuable Torah is. Right? You knew there are other ways and means of getting by. You know, you don't have to keep the very high standard of your neighbors. You could have gone down a little bit. So therefore, why didn't you use Hillel as your example? That is what they will say to him. And therefore, it's not an excuse. So this is an example of that it's not so clear when the choyte, sinner, will come to Hashem and you say, listen, I'm sorry, I couldn't do it. They're going to show him exactly why he could have done it. You could have done this, you could have done this, you could have done this. It's all clear. It's all exactly clear. There's no real excuse. The other example we're giving is the rich man. The rich man also comes before Hashem. Oshir shebo ledin oimim loyeb. A wealthy person comes to judgment. They say, mipnei ma lo asafte b'Torah. Why were you not engaged in Torah? Im oime oshir ha'isi b'Torah ha'isi b'lichosam. He says, I was wealthy and busy with my property. I had to take care of property. They would say, surely you weren't wealthier than Elazar ben Chasum. What's this Elazar ben Chasum? Amr alav Rabbi Elazar ben Chasum sheniach le'aviv elef iris v'yavosha. Elazar ben Chasum, when his father left him, when his father died, he left him 1,000 cities on dry land. 1,000 cities, that was like building complexes. He had 1,000 building complexes, you know, with apartments, with garages, the whole thing. 1,000 building complexes. V'chein elef svinus v'yam, and 1,000 ships at sea. Right, that was the extent of his father's business. Huge, multi-billionaire, right? For he would take a pouch of flour on his shoulder. He took the flour, that's what he took. That was just to make himself a little bit of food. And he would go from town to town, Medina to Medina, from state to state, Lilmud to. He abandoned it all. He put some caretaker in front, in charge of his father's business. He appointed a manager, and that's it. And he went to learn Torah. And he went, he traveled in a simple way. He didn't want chariots, he didn't want attention, he didn't want to draw attention to himself. The only thing he took with him was a bag of flour that he should have able to make himself some food. Once his own servants found him, they found him wandering the streets, and they wanted to enlist him in work, since he lived in that territory, and that territory all belonged to Elazar ben Chasum, that was himself. So therefore they were entitled to take townspeople, that they should contribute, since you're living in our territory, contribute to the upkeep, and therefore we want you to do, they enlisted him to do certain work. Kofoi, so they were forcing him to also work. So he said to them, so he said, please, I beg of you, please let me go, I want to go to study too. So the servants said, these people who grabbed him, they said, Chai Reb Elazar ben Chasum, we swear by Reb Elazar ben Chasum's life, right? We're not leaving you, you have to also do your share, you also have to work for the, you have to also have to work for the estate. And it's wondrous, he didn't tell them, listen, I'm really Ribbelos, I'm really the big boss here. He didn't even tell them that. They didn't know him because they'd never seen him before. He avoided this whole business. And he didn't, even now that they'd grabbed him, he didn't say, I'm Ribbelos, your master. He didn't want to take advantage of the glory of Torah that they should show him respect because of the Torah that he studied. Says the Gemara, He never even visited his business once. In his entire life, he never visited it once. This is the type of dedication, which is to say the cities or the boats. He never went to visit once. Everything was in the hands of the manager. Rather, he engaged in Torah day and night. And that was it. So therefore, if a wealthy person will say, I'm engaged, I'm business, I'm a very busy person, I've got many concerns. They're going to say, you weren't busier, you weren't bigger than Elazar ben Chasum. And therefore, if you wanted to learn Torah, you could have learned Torah. Nimtza Hillel mechayev aniyim. Comes out that Hillel indicts the needy people. Reb Elazar ben Chasum mechayev ashim. Elazar ben Chasum indicts the wealthy people. That's what we say, that the sinners cannot stand with the tzaddikim. Because as many excuses that they're going to cook up, the excuses are going to be filtered right through. And there's, You know, we find excuses for not doing what we're supposed to be doing. And they might even sound good at the time, but if we really think about it, we know ourselves that sometimes the excuses are quite weak. Once they come together with tzaddikim, other people were tzaddikim, how come you weren't a tzaddik? Okay, that's the end of chapter verse 5. Let's just quickly try and finish the last verse and finish the essay. The sixth verse says, Ki yodei Hashem derech tzaddikim. The last verse says that Hashem knows the way of the righteous, but derech rishoyim tzaddikim, whereas the way of the wicked is destroyed. Okay. Hashem knows the way of the righteous. You have to translate the word knows as loves. Hashem loves the way of the righteous. That's how you have to translate the word yodea. That's what it means. Right, so normally we read it, we don't think about it, but really, next time you read that verse, yodea Hashem derech tzaddikim, Hashem knows the way of the righteous, means He loves the way of the righteous. Like it says about Avram Avinu, He says, I know that He will command His household, Hashem said about Avram, meaning I love Him for the fact that the way He's going to bring up His household, the way He's going to command His children, that's what yadati means, that He loves Him. Hashem loves the righteous way. That's what gives nachas to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The righteous way, the proper way, the correct way, the tzaddik way of doing things. There are two types of love. There's a type of natural love. A person has a natural love to his family, etc. The second type of love is love that comes because of a certain reason. A person does something, and because of what he's done, you love him. Right? The love which comes because of something external that this person has done, that is called yodea. When it says yodea, Hashem yodea, and Hashem knows the way of the righteous, that means the type of love which comes through the actions of the righteous. Through the way they are acting, Hashem loves them. So it's which is to say that knowing that person is the reason for loving him. You know, I so enjoy this person, I can't help but loving him. And just by the way, it's for ourselves also. You know, we all love ourselves, obviously. So it says we love ourselves. Love your fellow Jew like yourself, which means you do love yourself. That's the natural love. But obviously, how much more pleasure do we get when we've done something very special and then we love ourselves for doing that something special? That's a different type of love. And when we feel happy with ourselves that, oh, you know, I really did something nice today. I really outdid myself. So there's a certain pride from doing the right thing. That's a love. We also know that love. A love that comes from doing something special is different to the natural love. So when it says here, Hashem knows the tzaddikim, it's this love which comes through knowing their way. Their way of doing things creates this tremendous love that Hashem has for the tzaddikim. V'zehu ikha oisha tzaddik, and this is the main happiness of the tzaddik. This love causes the tzaddik to love, to be happy. This is the true happiness of the tzaddik, is that he has this love of Hashem. Asher yagish ki ov hu etzel HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'atzmo. He feels that he is loved by Hashem. He feels Hashem really loves him. Hayim efshar limtzo oisha godol mizeh. Can we really experience a higher happiness? This is the highest happiness, that you feel that Hashem is really happy with you. He's really happy. You've done it really. And a good example, we're a child. A child who's pleased his parents, does something, and he knows his parents are really pleased. That's the greatest happiness the child has. Then he's really smiling ear to ear. Right? He managed to really, his parents are so proud of him. That's the greatest happiness. So every person has that. Because when we know we've acted in a proper way, we know that Hashem loves the way we're acting. That's the greatest happiness of all. Now, beyond that, also, the truth is Hashem cannot love naturally. Hashem doesn't have a natural love. He created nature. He's not under the rules of nature, because he created nature. Hashem created nature, so therefore he's not bound by the person that loves naturally. Hashem can't love naturally. He created nature. So there's no natural love of Hashem. Therefore, if Hashem loves us, if Hashem loves a tzaddik, it's only because for a reason. Hashem only loves us for a reason. He doesn't love us otherwise. He loves us only for a reason. And that's why this love is called knowing him. He knows his ways. He loves him. He appreciates it, and that's the reason he loves him. What is what is the cause of this love? A tzaddik batzmo, the righteous person himself. The tzaddik himself is the source of the love, but he just so much likes this way this person thinks, the way he acts, the way he talks. He just loves him so much. That's the love. The love is the actions and the choices that the tzaddik makes. And therefore, how much will the tzaddik feel his happiness, sense his happiness, when he knows that through his own actions, his own ways, his own deeds, he has acquired the love of Hashem. That's what the words are saying. Hashem loves the way of the righteous. He loves the way he acts, the way he conducts himself, the way he chooses to live. Because it's the way that the person has chosen to live his life, that's the reason for his love. And in contrast, part 2 of the verse, where's the way of the wicked, the lifestyle, the way of the wicked, that will be destroyed. That will disappear. Perish. The way of the wicked will be destroyed, even from the wicked person, will be lost, not only to Hashem and to the upper world, it will be lost from the Rosh himself. The wicked person loses his own world as well. He loses everything. How terrible will be the pain of the wicked person afterwards. His entire way of life. The wicked person also has a way of life. He's adopted a certain way of living his life. It's things that he does, things that he speaks, things that he thinks. All the plans he made. This person has rejected a Torah lifestyle. He's his own lifestyle. And he plans and he works and he studies and he does exams and he works hard, maybe 18-hour days or 20-hour days. Whoever does, right, and he's building. He's right, so busy working, so busy building up his lifestyle. So he also has his own way of life, his own approach to life. And what he planned and plotted, Kol HaShek Kova, all that he was hoping for. Everything he was hoping for, because he also has hopes and dreams. Every person has hopes and dreams. And which made up the content of his life. This is really the content of his life, what he was busy with. Hakol huhevel, it all disappears. It all vanishes. Whatever he builds, all vanishes. Tos dina, it was all an error. It was all an imagination. It was all a delusion. His whole lifestyle that he built, once he goes beyond this world, once it just moves beyond this world, as we all must move beyond this world, so then the entire life that he built up, this whole lifestyle, this whole mode of living, it's all an illusion. The ein boy klum, and there's nothing to it at all. Kashe yovo el mokum ha'emes, when he comes to the place of truth, yimtzei kol yom avayachai chai sheki, his entire life he was living a lie. He was living a lie because all the things that he invested in really have no worth at all. They have nothing. They're nothing. Right? The yachts and the limousines and the mansions, and it's nothing. It has no. There's nothing to it. It's just it looks pretty. So it's nice for a postcard, but that's it. Right? And this same person who used to laugh at the righteous person, this person who was the big shot businessman, used to make fun of the tzaddikim and used to say about the tzaddikim, you know, the yeshiva bochim, they used to say they're batlonim, good for nothings, you know, they're just bench warmers, they sit and warm the benches. That's the only useful thing they do, you know, the bench has to stay warm, so you know, they do a service, they keep the bench nice and warm, so that's all they're good for. So he used to make fun of yeshiva people and he used to make fun of the tzaddikim. Because he said, you know, they're living in a dream, they're living in an illusion. I'm the realist. This person used to say, I'm the realist. I'm the one with my feet planted on the ground, and these are just dreamers. These are good for nothing dreamers. They're just living a delusion. And he'll see that his whole lifestyle has just all lost. It's all disappears. And then a cloud. It's nothing. It's just a dream that has an illusion, a delusion that has nothing to it. Of it, kol chayav, all of his life is just, you know, just flushed away. All that he worked for is gone. It's nothing. They worked so hard. Sorry, we're not interested. You know? Imagine a person person opens a store and he fills it with merchandise and he works so hard, he shelves the shelves and he puts everything, right? Except, you know, he's selling a product no one wants to buy. Sorry. Mm-hmm. No one walks into his store. He builds this beautiful store. No one comes in. We're not interested in what you're selling. What you're selling is not... He wants to sell whatever, ice cream to Eskimos, whatever it is, right? It's just no one's interested. Klala Parshazos. Okay, we're just summing up the entire chapter as far as Ka Tzadik Musha Kol Yomechaya Goyla Mazeh. That the tzaddik is happy all the days of his life in this world. In this world, he's happy. And Shiulat Lachosu Beilam Abba, whereas in terms of the next world, there's no measure. It's beyond measure the type of success he has in the world to come. Ma'amoid Yichak Mimena Rosha, where's the wicked person? The Rosha is the other extreme. Tzarav Yisba Kol Yomechaya Beilam Azeh. He suffers greatly all of his life in this world because, you know, things go on, frustrations, people don't do. They don't do what you told them to do, and they don't listen, and they don't understand, and they're all idiots. So therefore, he suffers all sorts of frustrations and agonies in this world. There is no person where what he wants is done perfectly. There's no such thing. It works out exactly. You get exactly what you wanted. There's no person who says, I got exactly what I wanted. And how terrible then will be the pain of his soul when he comes into the future world, where there he sees the total desolation, the totality of his life is absolutely nothing. How much pain he will then suffer for having made the choices that he made. We should all be zeichet to tshuva shleima.